So if you ever wondered what it would be like to sit in on my class, you're about to find out. What you're about to hear is something I was recording for my class, and then I thought, hey, why don't I just put this out on the podcast and let people hear it? It's good stuff, right? Okay, stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gerdes.
Okay, so here I'm going to talk about teamwork. Teamwork has gotten a lot of attention in recent years because pretty much, unless you're an accountant just sitting in your cubicle doing your own thing, regardless of what you do in business, you're going to be working with teams. So teamwork is a competitive advantage because of synergy. Well, what is synergy? Synergy means that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That means that by working together, we're actually going to get more than if we just did your part and your part and your part and your part, and then we just lumped it together. In fact, if you just have a group of individuals, and this is what happens with a paper very often. I'll have, you know, five students in a group, and student A will do his part, and student B will do her part, and student C will do his part. Right? They'll all do each part, and then they'll lump it together, and it's kind of poorly written. It's jumbled. It sings in different voices, and it's blah. That's just what a group puts together, but a team would actually work differently. A team would work in such a way where they're refining different pieces of it. Maybe one person's the research guy and another person's the writer and another person's the editor, and then they're doing these specialized things, and then you're getting this multiplicative effect where, you know, it's not one plus one plus one plus one plus one. It's this person times that person times that person times that person, and you're getting much more of an effect than you would if you had all had to do exactly the same part. That is where you get the effect of synergy. Sometimes when we think about, you know, to illustrate this in class, I'll talk about, you know, if you had a basketball team, for example, and if you could have a basketball team full of centers, you'd think at first, you'd think, wow, that's great. They're all 7 foot tall. We're definitely going to win. I mean, we're just so much taller than everyone else. No, because you're going to get, and athletes are the first to point this out, man, we're going to get torn up because we don't have anybody for fast breaks, and we don't have the guys that can shoot from the, you know, far distance or whatever. You just have these really tall centers. It just doesn't work. You need the forward, you need the guard, you need the center, you need all the different positions in order to have a good team. So let me read this about teamwork. I talk about this as well. Napoleon Hill in The Law of Success said this: if you wish to know how I got my money, if that is what you call success, I will answer your question by saying that we have a mastermind here in our business, and that mind is made up of more than a score of men who constitute my personal staff of superintendents and managers and accountants and chemists and other necessary types. No one person in this group is the mastermind of which I speak, but the sum total of the minds in the group, coordinated, organized, and directed to a definite end in a spirit of harmonious cooperation, is the power that got my money from me. No two minds in the group are exactly alike, but each man in the group does the thing that he is supposed to do, and he does it better than any other person in the world could do it. Andrew Carnegie. Now, that is a great example. Everybody doing their different jobs in coordination, in harmony, in working together in order to understand how we're working together. It's teamwork at the highest level. That's how Carnegie said he got his millions. Okay, so when we talk about groups and teams, generally we don't think much difference between what's a group or what's a team. A group is simply two or more people who may have a common purpose and they show up for the same thing. It could be a formal group in an organization, a command group, an informal group, an interest group. There's all kinds of groups. So a formal group is established by management. An informal group is unofficial. An interest group, they're there because of a particular cause. So there's different reasons for different groups. Now, there are also different types of teams, and teams work more closely together to accomplish a task. That's the definition of a team. They're not just people showing up, but they actually have a particular mission or something that they're trying to do. Teams include things like top management teams and self-managing teams and cross-functional teams, virtual teams, project teams. A top management team, for example, is made up of a number of senior executives, the vice presidents over various aspects of the business. A self-managing team is a group that is got together to work on a particular task, and so they're a team, and they supervise their own activities. They don't necessarily have a designated leader. They may or may not, but they are working together and solving their own problems and sorting things out. And there's a lot of movement towards self-managing teams in the last, say, 20, 30 years in the business community. A cross-functional team is a situation where employees are brought together from different departments. And so now we have expertise from accounting and finance and human resources and some kind of development or manufacturing. And then we're getting everybody's perspective in order to do what it is that we're going to do. Now, what's interesting is in the 1980s, Ford assembled 100 people, a cross-functional team, sales, assembly, design, customers, and others to redefine the automobile. And they built the car that had greater success than any for a long time for Ford. It was the Ford Taurus. It dominated the 1980s and early 90s. Now, that car was a raving success, but one of the reasons was the cross-functionality of it. Engineers, for example, would have never dreamed of the thing that was most important to the customer, and they only knew this because they brought in moms. And so mom said, well, I want more cup holders. Engineers weren't thinking anything of it, but the mom said, we want more cup holders, and that got designed into the car, and it dominated. It's not the only thing that caused it to be a success, but it was a big thing. Okay, a project team. A project team works on a special project. They usually have, they're self-managing, they have maybe have a project manager, and they self-manage on a particular task. They're usually away from the rest of the organization for that time while they're innovating, creating something new, but it's a specific project for a specific period of time. It is not an ongoing thing, but that's a project team. They're dedicated to this project for a period of time. Now, virtual teams. You're probably doing this right now, and if you're in my class, you're certainly doing this, but if you are at work now, or you know, in 2020, who knows how long this will go with the quarantine, you converted from working at work about February into March into a virtual team because you had to, because everything else shut down. Virtual teams are great because they allow you to have, you know, get the best talent from wherever, but they also have pluses, they have minuses. So virtual teams may be self-managing or cross-functional. They may be temporary. They may be formal, whatever. But their virtual is just that they don't meet face-to-face. And that's what's important about a virtual team. Working on a virtual team, it's more difficult in many ways because they have to overcome the same logistical problems. Plus, they have to overcome the logistical problems of being able to meet at particular times and not be able to walk down the hall. And it's amazing. If 2020 taught us nothing, it taught us that human interaction is really important. And we kind of miss it when we can't have it. So they have greater interpersonal barriers. They have issues perhaps with technology. You can get more people, but how they interact is going to be a little bit throttled. They also have issues with trust perhaps coming up. A lack of trust can become a more significant barrier in virtual teams because we just don't operate the same way when we're not together. So if you're a manager over a virtual team, you have to be very proactive in helping them to develop their mission, to create their group identity, to work on trust issues, to work on communication issues, to overcome all of these type of barriers. You can still get things done, but you have to be more proactive with that. Okay, now at a certain point, I shift gears and I talk about when you're thinking about a team, think about the team dynamics. So for example, I give, as an example, elements. I mean like elements in the periodic table. You have oxygen, that's an O, and you have a hydrogen, which is an H. And if you put a few of these together, two H's and an O, you get pure, refreshing, delicious water, okay? That is two hydrogens and one oxygen. And think of that like a team. There's these three guys on a team. Everything's working well. What if you add another O? That other O, you know, H2O2 now becomes hydrogen peroxide. That's a whole different thing. You don't want to drink that. And that's kind of like how teams are. You add another person to the team and the dynamics change. Replace one of the hydrogens, or replace the hydrogens completely and just add a carbon. Now you have CO2. That's carbon dioxide. And it's lethal in enough quantity. So again, the same. This is just to illustrate that the combination of the team, the players on the team, really changes the team dynamics. So you have to be really careful about that. There are a number of factors that change the team dynamics, things like cohesiveness. That's the degree to which the group it gets along well. Okay, how bonded are they? Now, that it could be a great thing that they're bonded and they work together and they like to be together, but on the other side of that, they could also more easily get into groupthink if they're not careful. Another issue is the span of control. The span of control is the number of subordinates that can be managed effectively, okay? And it's usually about 12, a manageable span of control. Now, some organizations have gone to flattening the organization where a manager is not managing 12, he's managing maybe 60 people. And it's, you can't fully manage 60 people, which means that he can't micromanage, which turns out to be a good thing that he can't micromanage. But you can only really well manage, and the military has figured this out, businesses confirmed it, about 12 people, that's your span of control. The size of the group also has an impact on the team as well. So small groups of, say, 2 to 9 members are optimal in certain situations. Large groups are better suited to other tasks, like large complex tasks. Think about, like, for example, a large group like Congress. Congress is going to be a huge group, and then in Congress there's going to be subcommittees that will do most of the functioning of that group. And so the group roles then become important, and the larger the group, the more important the group roles become as well. Now, there's another concept I want to cover as well. It's called social loafing. It's a weird sounding term, but that's the way it's called in the social science literature. In the economic literature, it's called something else. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. So social loafing is exerting less effort as a member of the group than when you're working alone. You're riding the coattails of what everybody else is doing. Sometimes in class, I'll say this. I say, you remember when you were in college or high school or whatever, and you were working on a group project and you did all the work and there were 2 or 3 other people that were just, they didn't do anything, but they got the same grade. Wasn't that kind of frustrating? And all the hands go up. What great. I got all the smart people in this class. All the social loafers are somewhere else. And they all chuckle. But the point is that concept, social loafing, it's terrible. In economics, it's called the free rider effect. Okay, you're riding on the coattails of other people. You're getting the benefit, but somebody else is doing the work. And that's toxic to the organization or the team. Now, I say this in my textbook, and I very often emphasize this particular line in class. Quote, social loafing is treason against the group, and the loafer is a leech who drains the group of resources without returning equivalent to the group. In a classroom setting, a social loafer ought to receive no mercy from his professor or the group that he lets down. And I usually emphasize that, and then I talk about how you're going to be grading each other at the end of the semester and evaluating each other for your work. So social loafing is toxic, and you should not allow it, whether it's in a classroom, like in my scenario, or whether it's at work. It's just going to poison the atmosphere. Social loafing is essentially the effect that you get from socialism, where everybody gets regardless of what inputs they put into the process. Okay, so the cure for social loafing is accountability and responsibility. That is, every member of the team has to be accountable for a particular part of the task, and everybody has to be responsible as well. Responsibility is the duty to perform the task, and accountability is the requirement to report on that in order to justify what it is that you have done, that you have completed your duty. Okay, so that's how you cure social loafing. I also want to talk about the 5 stages of team development. So this is a pretty common thing in the academic literature. If you've been in a management class before, you've probably heard this, but it's forming, storming, norming, and performing. And so forming is the first step. You get get to a new class, you get introduced to your group, and they say, okay, well, we're going to get started, and you form, and you five are together over here, you five are together over here. Very often professors are lazy, and they'll just say, hey, it's by your last name, A through D, G, E through G, H through, right, okay, and they work their way through the list. You form, you get together, you don't know everybody, and you form. But then you have to storm. Now, storming is the second phase. It is marked by conflict. And sometimes we like to try to avoid this conflict, but it's a bad idea. Don't do it. If you try to avoid the conflict, you stay in this storming stage. You're not going to get out of the storming stage until you work out the conflict. And then you move to norming. That's the third stage of team development. In norming, your standards start to emerge, you start to get a sense of unity, and you start to actually make some progress toward working toward your goals. And then you move into performing. Performing is when you're hitting your high notes. It's the fourth stage of team development. At this point, you're focusing completely on your task. You're fully functional. You're moving. You're getting this momentum. Everything's cooking with oil. You finally complete your task and you get to your fifth stage, which is adjourning. Adjourning is where you disband and you go your separate ways. Now, here's how you know if you had a good group. If you had a good group, when you get to this adjourning stage, you go, oh, well, you know, I mean, we really worked hard, and I'm kind of glad that we worked so hard. I'm also kind of sad, and I'm going to hate to see these guys go. I mean, it was a good team. I really enjoyed being with these people. They're good people. I hope I'm on that kind of team again. Now, if you're in a bad group, you're like, whoo, glad that's over. If you have that, whoo, glad that's over kind of experience, you had a bad team, okay? If that's what you're thinking when you adjourn. Okay. So we covered a lot when we talked about teams, and I want to leave you with one last thought. This is a quotation that I want you to contemplate as you leave this lesson. This is from Hyman Rickover. He was the father of the nuclear navy. He had the vision and foresight to get nuclear reactors into submarines so that they could be underwater for a good long time and be a real threat to enemies. Okay, he said this, responsibility is a unique concept. You may share it with others, but your portion is not diminished. You may delegate it, but it is still with you. If responsibility is rightly yours, no evasion or ignorance or passing the blame can shift the burden to someone else. Unless you can point the finger at the man who is responsible when something goes wrong, then you have never had anyone really responsible. So that's just something to think about as you think about how to cure social loafing and how to construct good teams that will be functional as you move forward.